오 나무 아름다 바수대와여
sounded drums in honor, and the honest royal order commenced demonstrations of honor and respect. And from the sky fell showers of flowers. Yeah, it could be the sadhavas above the rajas. Mm-hmm. Those kings were saying, that's the subject. Anyway, purport. Is this loud enough? Sounds like it's... Maybe you can turn it up a bit. Purport. Bhishma Deva was respected both by the human beings... That's less. Bhishma Deva was respected both by the human beings and by the demigods. The human beings live on Earth and similar other planets in the Bhur and Bhuvar group of planets. But the demigods live on in the Swara or heavenly planets. And all of them knew Bhishma Deva as a great warrior and devotee of the Lord. As a Mahajana, or authority, he was on the level of Brahma, Narada, and Shiva, although he was a human being. Qualification on a par with the great demigods is possible only on attainment of spiritual perfection. Thus Bhishma Deva was known all over the universes. And during his time, interplanetary travel was effected by finer methods than the futile endeavors of mechanical spacecraft. When the distant planets were informed of the passing away of Bhishma Deva, all the inhabitants of the upper planets as well as of the Earth dropped showers of flowers to show due respect to the departed great personality. This showering of flowers from heaven is a sign of recognition by great demigods.
and it should never be compared to the decoration of a dead body. The body of Bhishmadeva lost its material effects due to being surcharged with spiritual realization, and thus the body was spiritualized as when iron becomes red hot when in contact with fire. The body of a fully self-realized soul is not, therefore, accepted as material. Special ceremonies are observed for such spiritual bodies. The respect and recognition of Bhishmadeva are never to be imitated by artificial means. As it has become a fashion to observe the so-called Jayanti ceremony for any and every common man. According to authorized Shastras, such a Jayanti ceremony for an ordinary man, however exalted he may be materially, is an offense to the Lord, because Jayanti is reserved for the day when the Lord appeared on the earth. Bhishmadeva was unique in his activities, and his passing away to the kingdom of God is also unique. Tatva dundavayo deidu deva manava vaditaha shansham suk sadavo ragya katpetu pushpavishtaya. Anyway, it's not set up right. I just make it worse. Bhishmadeva is glorified even by the demigods. He's, as Prabhupada mentions here, he's acknowledged to be one of the 12 Mahajans, or special authorities on Krishna consciousness, of whom most of them are not human beings, they're superhuman persons. The Kumaras, Narada, Shiva, even Swayambhuva Manu is not an ordinary human being. But Bhishmadeva is a king born in a human family. Other human being on the list, although he's a rishi, is Shukadeva. So Bhishma is probably on the list of 12 Mahajans, the lowest according to material calculation, according to his material status. He's just a king on the earth. But persons who are materially much higher situated than him went out of their way to glorify him, especially at the time of his passing away. A devotee, a pure devotee, although he comes into this world with a material body, every living entity who is born into the material world obtains a material body. That's Krishna's arrangement. Sambhavani atmamayaya vidayadahi dharmasya vladyubhavati bharata paritranaya sadhana vinyashayata dushkadana. No, that's not either. What's the verse? Sambhavani atmamayaya. Anyway, I appear. Atmamayaya is explained as meaning that Krishna appears in his original spiritual body when he comes to the material world. But finite living beings don't, except for maybe some exception that I cannot even think of, finite living beings, when they come to this world, they take material bodies. They don't come in there, they don't import their spiritual body from Vaikuntha. Just like to bring a car into this country from another country is quite difficult. You have to pay very high taxes. You have to put a deposit probably equal to the value of the car and leave that with the government until you bring the car back out of the country. So only in very rare cases is someone going, who is very special, is going to be, arrangements will be made for him to bring his own automobile into India from outside. Put it in a boat, ship it from Singapore, and then pay the huge taxes and deposit to bring that car into India. It's not done in ordinary cases, even for big businessmen. They just rent a car. So similarly, spiritual bodies is imported into the material world only in the case of the Supreme Lord. It's too expensive for the living entities to do the same, make the same arrangement. So there, they rent bodies. They come to the material world, and they rent a body. They get a material body to use while they're in the material world. Even great devotees, even eternal associates of the Lord. I don't know if anyone can give me a counterexample of a finite living entity who came into this material world with his spiritual body. Some have left the material world in their material bodies, which became transformed, like Guru Maharaj. But I don't know of anyone who was born in his Vaikuntha body in the material world, other than the Supreme Lord. Still, a great devotee like Bhishma Deva, his body is not considered ordinary, even when he leaves that body. Of course, a person's body is of much more value while he's living in it. Once he leaves it, it's not of much practical use, just as fertilizer. Otherwise, what can you do with a dead body? But, and therefore, normally, the Vedic culture, dead bodies are disposed of by burning. It's a quick way to get rid of them, and then the remains don't take up space, and they don't weigh much. The ashes can be thrown into the river, the sacred river. Rather than keeping the bones of dead bodies in graves, piling up and filling valuable real estate in the cities. Cities that have a large percentage of their space dedicated to graveyards. Vedic culture instead arranges that most people's bodies, when they're dead, are just burned. But there are exceptions. A great Vaishnava, especially tradition, or rather, according to the, because people don't know who's a great Vaishnava. They don't have the discrimination to distinguish. So the general principle in Vedic culture is that a celibate person, his body should be preserved after death, put into a samadhi. But actually the spiritual principle is that any pure devotee, his body is sacred. So actually, Vipadeva was burned, because he was a kshatriya. The external rituals were observed, and Yudhishthira performed tasya nirharanadini. It's next verse. Tasya nirharanadini sampari tasya bhargavaha bhargava Yudhishthira karyatva muhurtam dukto bhavat. So Yudhishthira, Bhishmadeva didn't have any sons. He had taken his vow of lifelong celibacy. So there was no son to perform his funeral. Yudhishthira took that position as his elder disciple. When a celibate person dies, especially a person who doesn't have any children, then the spiritual disciple of the person takes the position of the son and performs the funeral ceremony. So Yudhishthira, Niharana is the removing of the body. This is the beginning of the funeral ceremony. It is a ceremonious, respectful taking of the body to the place where it will be burned or interred. And it's understood that Bhishma Dev, like all the other warriors who died on the battlefield, he was cremated. But still, demigods in heaven and human beings played on their kettle drums. This is a sign of auspiciousness. In Western orchestras, the kettle drum is just another percussion instrument. It's preferred because it can be tuned. You could change the pitch of a kettle drum by turning a screw. And so it's more suitable for Western music. But in the Vedic culture, the original dudnubi, the original kettle drum, is for auspicious occasions. And the demigods play them in heaven. When you hear the kettle drums in the sky, we think we're hearing lightning or thunder, but actually sometimes It's an auspicious occasion, and the demigods are playing their kettle drums to congratulate someone on an auspicious occasion. Vasudeva. What's his name? Not Anaka drum. Anaka is another drum, another big drum. So Anaka's Dundunis were played at his birth, and therefore that was his name, Anaka Dundunis. Even the name and the sound of the word Dundunis sounds like the beating of a kettle drum. And the demigods showered flowers from heaven. This is imitated by human beings sometimes. They throw flowers. Karmi weddings, they throw rice. But the demigods, they shower flowers from heaven. That is when you hear these kettle drums and these flowers are falling from heaven, you know that whatever has happened is most auspicious and is being recognized and congratulated by the demigods. So such was the passing away of Bhishmadeva. Even though he was a human being, even though his body is material, and because he's a king, not a Brahmin or a sannyasi, and he's celibate, he's still a king, so I think his body was burned. I don't know if anyone can tell me I'm wrong, that his body wasn't burned. But it's recognized, as we said in the previous verse, everyone who was present, the sages who were present there on that place where, on the battlefield where Bhishma left his body, they could all tell that he had gone back to Godhead. That he had not died an ordinary death. Even an expert Ayurvedic physician can perceive how the soul is leaving the body. Doctor who's expert can tell you, oh, this person's soul left through his mouth or through his anus, and tell you, give you an idea of what the destination of that soul is. One who leaves through his mouth will stay in the material world, but he may get a more elevated and go to heaven, or stay in the human race. One who leaves his body through his anus is going to hell. And one who leaves his body through the top of the head has attained liberation. So the sages, with their more subtle perception, could see with their own eyes that Bhishmadeva had attained liberation. And those among those sages present who were Vaishnavas could understand that it was not in personal liberation, but that Bhishmadeva went back to Vaikuntha. That's verified by Prabhupada in his previous purport, that he went to the planet of Bharatasarathi in Vaikuntha. So this is being congratulated by great sages and demigods and by other human beings. This is appropriate. When an ordinary person dies, his body has no value. It should be disposed of quickly. When a saintly person dies, that body should be considered sacred. Alright, so any questions or comments? Yes.
Answer
the question. Yes.
Anusuyava.
Could you translate that?
So, those are pure, not in this, those are pure, amongst the kings. The king, those are not in this amongst the kings.
They offered praise. Yeah. That means that there are some kings who were there, or some kings who were still envious of Bhishma.
Therefore, they withheld praise because they were still feeling bad.
And
they still considered Bhishma their enemy.
And Jiva Goswami says, Tateti, this verse, Dagnam, Sabayam Iti Sishesha.
Okay, not, we're not talking about kings everywhere, but kings in that particular assembly.
Sabayam,
in that, in, that means Tasyam Sabayam, in that assembly. It's not an assembly place, it's not a building. They were out in the battlefield, but it's in the, it's a gathering of sages and other people. So that's called Sabha.
So I have one question. Qualification on the qualification on part of the great demigods is possible only on attainment of spiritual perfection.
Yes?
Can you explain this sentence on qualification on part of the great demigods?
Well, usually human beings are, from all material calculations, are less qualified than demigods. They don't live as long, they don't have as much power, they don't have as much intelligence and influence. So human beings are, in many ways, inferior to demigods. That general rule can be overruled in the case of a pure devotee. His influence, his power, his intelligence is, becomes even greater than that of the demigods. A second?
The shine of flowers from heaven and the sign of recommendation by great demigods should never be compared to the decoration of the dead bodies.
Well, when an ordinary person dies, his family and friends make a fuss. And they may be showering flowers also. Or they, you know, they bring flowers to the funeral. They buy flowers in the flower shop and bring them to the funeral. But that's decoration of a dead body. That's, that person doesn't deserve so much. You know, his dead body doesn't deserve so much ceremony. Better just dispose of it. Showering of flowers, or presentation of flowers, worshipping of a dead body is appropriate when it's the body of a pure devotee. Otherwise it's not. It's just decorating a dead body. Is it nothing or something?
Prabhupada mentions in the book Jayanti ceremony. Does he mean Gandhi Jayanti?
Yeah, well, there are other, especially, well, there's others. There's Gandhi Jayanti is on the official calendar of India, but there's other ordinary people who get so called Jayantis in the popular opinion. And Prabhupada, but I don't, you know, Prabhupada has mentioned Gandhi Jayanti in other places. But here he's being more general about anybody other than the Supreme Lord. His birthday shouldn't be called Jayanti.
So when we talked with Hindu people, can we say that he was not saint and it's not proper to call him Jayanti?
Well, you can say that. You may be getting into a fight if you tell people that Gandhi's not a saint. Maybe what you can accomplish by doing that may be less than the harm, you know, the trouble you may get. I tell people Gandhi's not a saint, but you can tell them Gandhi's not God, and we don't want to call anybody's birthday who's not God Jayanti. At least tell them he's not God.
And the second question is, Bhishma there was Mahavira, and it means that he knew Dharma. At the same time, when Gopi was insulted, he was asking for some help, and actually, if I'm not mistaken, he was asked to judge the situation. He said, oh, actually, God is very complicated and I can't say anything. What does it mean? Does it mean that he had like a special license not to judge in that moment? Or what was his point? Just me?
Well, I don't know. That's difficult to understand why he didn't even speak up at that time. Because on other occasions he did speak up. Then most of the time he spoke up very frankly. In defense of what was right, against the opinions of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. But he never lifted a finger, you know, to physical force.
because of his vow, celibacy, he couldn't get involved in the politics. If he were to oppose Dhritarashtra, he'd end up on the throne. And that, you know, he couldn't do that. He couldn't assume the throne because he vowed never to have children, never to get married. So therefore, he had to avoid politics to avoid ending on the throne. If he got involved in politics, he would very easily defeat everybody else and end up on the throne, and he couldn't do that. That's the reason why he couldn't ever physically oppose. But I don't know why he couldn't speak at that time. Do you know?
During the ceremony of the Rajasarya sacrifice, when Shishupal started blaspheming Krishna, when the sages began to leave and everyone began to, all the pious people began to leave, it would be considered karma to kill that person, kill Shishupal. But maybe Bhishmadeva was aware of the fact that Krishna is going to kill him and Krishna is arranging it. So even when Bhishmadeva goes to kill, when Bhima goes to kill him, he stops Bhima. He just holds him back because he knows that
he knew that Krishna would take care of
Krishna.
And in this case also, he didn't speak up against Draupadi's because he knew Krishna would protect her? Could be. He also was generally constrained because he was supported by, he got financial support from Duryodhana. Therefore he had to end up fighting on Duryodhana's side in the battle. So that was also a constraint on him. Although generally he would speak frankly anyway.
I heard an explanation for this.
Yes, sir?
There's another question
that I asked. Yeah, well, let's still deal with this one. Could you close this question?
I think I heard it in my last trip in Chaka. I think in the class I've been mentioning that the reason why he didn't say anything is because his consciousness was contaminated by eating the food that was cooked by the food was by eating their food. It was contaminated by eating their food.
That's one commentary? Okay, you have to check our sources.
Yeah.
Yeah, who said it?
I mean, if he accepted it was being paid, mostly.
Yeah, okay, but okay.
You don't need too much
respect.
Yeah, well, we have to take more
into that. Well, yeah, just want to make sure that that came from an authorized source.
Okay, there was another comment about this Jayanti. Or Jayanti. Like how we should refer only to Krishna's birthday. Because Krishna, when Krishna appeared, there was the concentration Jayanti. So,
that's the name of the constellation.
Constellation of stars which is present. Yes, so actually we can't even say Balaram Jayanti. It was not a Jayanti constellation of Balaram
Jayanti. Yeah, Jayanti doesn't mean, Jayanti doesn't mean birthday. It's not grammatically derived from the verb Jayanti.
Yeah, it's applied all over. It became a practice after Krishna Jayanti. We started applying it to Ambedkar Jayanti, Gandhi Jayanti, everything in birthday.
Even Gita?
Maybe it got misunderstood.
Probably wrong grammatically, yeah. Of course, the same constellation comes around every month, so there could be other Jayantis according to that view. Yes? Pull out another one.
When Prabhupada one time was in Japan and getting Buddha Jayanti Park, so then he told that we should have Krishna Jayanti Park also in this Gautri area. I had one time in Noida temple. They told like this, we should have Krishna Jayanti Park in
where?
In New Delhi area. No, they have Prabhupada desire to build 12 temples. So, in Noida Park, they have planned to build Krishna Jayanti Park.
Yes, yes.
He also called out Krishna Jayanti.
Yes.
There's only about three missions. spoke about cremation and how most of the bodies were buried, most of the bodies were burned. But also, like, if a person was not open-eyed, was not over.
Children, infants, and you
know. If they died before the time.
Yes, the karmakanda principle is if a person is celibate, then his body, and a person who's underage is celibate. So therefore his body doesn't have to be burned. The body is not impure because there's been no sex.
Can it be buried? That's one of the rivers?
Yeah, children's bodies are buried. Cows' bodies are buried. Oh no, they're buried? Cows? I think around here they burn cows, but I don't know what the Vedic standard is. Okay.
Former Rupa's place.
Yes.
He had a bull, and which passed away. He was the one that was passing service, but they had retired and made the place. I guess a samadhi of the bull. And there are
samadhi.
Horns.
Yes.
Horns, and it's there in the Goshala. And he has that is buried there in the horns. But it was a platform. It was a bull. Yeah, it's a
very good. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam.